The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 296. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the Pride of Long Island, Colin Moriarty. The Dark Knight of News, Andrew Goldfarb.
I don't know what just happened.
And our friend from across the pond.
Oi, Kizzy McDonald! Oi, it's Kizzy McDonald from the UK!
Hey, cousin.
Hello, that's not how I actually sound.
Oh, that's
you may
weird.
Be surprised to learn.
Do people meet you and they're blown away that that's not how you sound?
I've been listening
to podcasts.
Thousands.
Not happened to Americans yet so far.
We'll see what happens at E3, see how many people know you.
I did just slap Greg Miller's full in the face.
Twice.
Two times.
I heard it like clear across the office.
Exactly, I couldn't see it, but I could hear it and it was loud.
I'm so sorry.
Keza, tell the listeners about yourself.
My name's Keza. I'm Scottish, not English, actually. Just a little point
of same thing to Greg.
You know what I'm saying?
I write about video games for a living, which I've been doing for about 8 years, since I was basically a fetus.
Wow.
I have worked for IGN for the last 2 years. I'm our UK games editor in the UK.
You've only been here 2 years?
That's right.
Why is it feels so much longer?
It's just every second in my company feels like 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
She has the respect of a wily old veteran, though,
in the
arts.
Yeah, you won an award.
I did win an award.
What was
that
it?
That was nice. I won Games Writer of the Year last year.
Look at that, everybody.
This makes me sound like a total dickhead, doesn't it?
Just bragging about
I'm
it.
Oh, I'm here. I won an award. Lucky me.
Hey, guys. I just got here, but let me tell you about this award.
So I work in the UK. I do the same thing, basically, as we do here, but I do it across the pond.
And with a different accent.
Used to words unnecessarily. That's basically the difference, right?
That's it.
Beyond is called Beyond up there.
Ah, that was a good one, Goldfarb.
Yep, it's good.
You got your one. You should go.
All right, I'll see you guys later.
Ladies and gentlemen, we usually say we have a really good show, but I mean this week, let's not fuck around.
We're not pulling your list.
Yeah. All right, you got E3
Welcome
next
to the
week.
8 hour Beyond.
We got to get moving, or you know it will.
It's going to be longer even than Sony's press conference.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a lot of Wonder Book to talk about. E3's next week. That means our annual E3 predictions, where each of us pick 5 PlayStation predictions and run them down, see what's up, run them up the flagpole, see how much we know about this industry before we get to actually what's going to happen.
Every one of us is wrong. Yeah,
but let's not beat around the bush about the most important thing so far. Probably we're recording a day late. It's not Tuesday, it's Wednesday.
Mm. What the hell?
One of the reasons we did that, of course, was so we could talk about The Last of Us. Don't worry, we're not going to spoil the game for you. Colin reviewed it. We're going to talk about it as toe. But let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Oh, also, heads up. Yeah, we know the mic dropped out last week.
Yeah.
Jiminy Christmas.
Well, wait. So we are very apologetic about the audio fidelity of the podcast the last few weeks since we moved up here.
Yeah, they're
into
working
this new room. It's got bad mojo.
Out.
I was like fucking haunted or something.
Yeah.
So we apologize about that. We've been doing Podcast Beyond for almost 300 episodes. We want the fidelity to be just right.
You know what, though? I've listened to some shite podcasts with shite sound. This is way better. Don't beat yourself up too much.
When it works.
You're basically
when it's at maximum capacity, it
you
sounds great.
You should see our podcast setup in London. Then you would know true pain.
Well, you know, it's
great.
One of those things where our listeners are paying for a premium product, so they have every right to just torture us on Twitter.
No doubt.
People were really mad at me. Like, I was actively turning off my mic.
I mean, we're doing it different. I'm wearing the dumb headset. I don't know how much it works, because I still think that the headset's connected to the board, and I think the problem was in GarageBand.
You have no idea what's going on.
Of course not.
No.
There are 11 items on the list.
Ooh.
Before I get started, though, I didn't put it on the Roper Report, but we have an interesting story about Prey 2.
Oh, right.
Written by Mitch Dyer about what went wrong with that game, why it's in development hell. I think it's pretty much dead now. You should go read that on IGN.
Yeah, well, the rumors that it's now at Arkane.
Yeah, which would make sense.
Yeah.
Number one. Greg, you broke this story. DC Universe Online and PlanetSide 2 are coming to PlayStation 4.
Swish!
That's all we know for right now, but it's not surprising that two successful games owned by Sony Online Entertainment will be coming to the PlayStation 4.
Aren't they both free to play?
They are both free to play.
Well, there you go. That indicates that Dust514 was not a one-off. Free to play is going to be a thing for PS4.
Yeah.
Very good point. Especially with all the way they're trying. I mean, like, you know, PlanetSide 2, a big PC game already, right? They came over. And that was the interesting thing is, like, I thought it had already been announced, kind of. I forgot about it because on Up at Noon, he hinted at it and we talked about it. And that was the title of Up at Noon. But the DC Universe one's interesting, right? Because of the fact that Sony was, you know, none of the PS3 games are going to be ready at launch. Your PSN games like Journey and stuff aren't going to work when you come over here. So it's interesting that, I guess, SOE is going through these hoops to make sure that they have their.
Do we know if it's. I mean, do you spend $60 on that game? Like, I know it's free to play, right. But I mean, are you? There's not going to be a disc-based DC Universe Online. That
correct.
You
no, they are both digital downloads. Okay, okay. There's gotcha, no disc based for this one.
Okay, interesting.
I mean, technically, all games are free to play once you've bought them.
I didn't know if it was like Guild Wars 2 isn't the deal with that, where you buy it, but then there's not a subscription fee.
Yes,
I thought it might be
subscription free.
It's yes. Thank you.
Hold on. Use your words, Goldfarb. Number two, free to play co-op shooter Warframe is also coming to PS4. Oh. I broke that story. By way of the Darkness 2 and Dark Sector developer Digital Extremes, read our full reveal interview on IGN.
I should have never given you money.
Number three. If you're in North America.
Nobody cares about that, right?
What?
That news, that game that's coming out? Like, none of us had anything to follow up.
I have no idea what that game is.
Yeah.
Yeah, me neither.
It's like a co-op game, four-player co-op game that takes place in space and you're ninjas. And it's actually supposed to be pretty good.
So you'll spend 15 minutes on the Roper Report talking about fucking Light Knob over there, but when it comes down to this game, people care about it.
Everyone cares about Light Knob, though.
Scott Rohde's sequel.
Number three. If you're in North America, you'll get 5 free games in June on PlayStation Plus. They are as follows. PS3 games. Deus Ex Human Revolution, Saints Row the Third, and Machinarium. And on Vita, Orc Attack and Virtue's Last Reward.
Andrew,
it's like $180 worth of
games. Virtue's Last Reward is much, much better than it has any right to be.
True.
Seriously good game.
Yeah, I have it. I just haven't played it yet.
I played a bit.
No like time it. To play goddamn anything.
I ain't got time to play nothing. I'll tell you how I got depressed. Getting ready to go. I'm here for one day this week. Then tomorrow I go to Chicago, fly away, and then I fly to E3, then I fly back, and all this other stuff. I was thinking I want to get a good Vita game, getting going, right?
Right.
I was like, oh, wait, isn't Dragon's Crown coming out in June?
Oh.
And then I jump now, August. I'm like, oh, goddamn it.
No. You got Men's Room Mayhem, though.
Is that going to keep me busy for that long?
I don't think so.
No.
Having spent
it will, though. Limbo, my second playthrough. Mm.
That will keep you busy for, what, two or three hours, though, right? On second playthrough, it's you know, the weird thing was when I played Limbo again recently on PS3, I was like, why don't I remember any of the answers to any of these damn puzzles? Am I retarded? Why don't I remember this? I didn't do it that long ago.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It happens. It's probably better that way.
Yeah.
I guarantee that's what's going to happen to me. You know, talk 2 or 3 hours on the plane. I'm going to be like, what do I do?
It's just so weird when you replay stuff.
I run across the hotel.
I replayed Shenmue a while back. And that's the only game where I had, like, premonitions. You know, I'd be walking somewhere, and I'd be like, hang on, I'm going to meet a guy called Charlie, and he's going to tell me to get my hair cut, and it's going to turn out to be a ninja guy. It was just really bizarre premonitions of what was going to happen, but I didn't consciously remember it.
Yeah, it kind of have. I feel like in a puzzle game, that's kind of serendipitous almost.
Yeah.
Like, you can enjoy it again almost fresh.
Yes.
Through your own ignorance.
I'm also going to beat Bigfoot. I haven't beaten the Bigfoot game
yet. Oh, Jacob Jones.
Yeah. Jacob Jones!
Jacob Jones is fun. Did you play Jacob Jones?
No, I saw it. I didn't play it. Is it good? Is it worth it?
Yeah,
I think it's really fun.
I was really enjoying it.
It's like Professor Layton, but
did you beat it, Colin?
No, not yet.
Yeah.
About 20 puzzles in. I think there's only 25. So. Thank God I had Charlotte with me on the plane playing with me because I wouldn't have been able to beat some of those puzzles.
Yeah.
Because I'm not very good at those games. Number four, Dark Souls 2 has an official release date or month. Anyway, it will launch on March of 2014.
Woo!
And it's currently announced for PC, Xbox 360, and PlayStation 3. I know Kez is excited about that.
I would be more excited about it if I was definitely sure they weren't going to fuck it up. But I'm only like 90% sure they're not going to fuck it up.
Oh, okay. Well, that's better than...
But March is good because I was worried it was going to ruin the end of the year again. Because the thing about Dark Souls or Demon Souls is that once you start playing it, you can't play any other video games. They just don't occupy your mind anymore. So if it comes out at the end of the year when everything else is out, you end up missing a whole... end of season
the deluge
rush. Yeah, so I mean, I'm quite glad it's coming out in March.
I had the opposite problem. That's why I never played, well, I guess it was Dark Souls, not Demon Souls. But I didn't play Dark Souls because it came out around the same time as a bunch of other stuff. And
That's kind of right?
Made the decision of other things over that.
I think a lot of people did that. So I think March is a really good time. Although this year's March was busy. Hopefully next year's won't be quite so insane. And we
I feel like
just play Dark Souls 2 all the time.
This year's March was unnecessarily busy because everyone was avoiding April because we all assumed GTA 5 would come out then. And I feel like publishers did too. And then GTA ended up being September anyway.
Oh.
So April was like just injustice.
And there's just nothing at all in June.
Yeah.
Number five. Guacamelee is getting new DLC.
Hooray!
We broke the story exclusively as well. It was supposed to already come out. There was supposed to be a patch for it yesterday, but there were some bugs and some problems with it. Nonetheless, when the DLC does launch, it will include three new costumes that give both Juan and Tostada new skills. The DLC also comes packing new trophies.
Yeah!
The DLC is pretty cool. You can dress as a chicken. Or a skeleton. And things of this nature. They give you special moves and special abilities. So, like, the skeleton, I think, gives you unlimited...
Stamina,
but like your health doesn't recover at all.
Which is, it sounds hard as hell. Like going through the, what is it, the Caverna de Pollo or whatever.
Yeah, you get a trophy for
my Spanish is fantastic.
Caverna de Pollo?
Got that Caverna de Pollo?
I would have just said Polo, so.
Yeah, that's true. What was, the other costume was cool too. It gave you some kind of power too.
There's one, the third costume is one that lets Juan and Tostada, I think, switch.
Oh yeah, and the, yeah, and the chicken one, you regain health. Yeah, that's right.
Number six. Naughty Dog has revealed that the basis for its next-generation PlayStation 4 engine will find its roots in the same current-gen engine that ran Uncharted and The Last of Us. This lets them skip the headaches they experience when they transition from PS2 to PS3 and tweak it as required. Apparently, the engine that ran Jack and Daxter obviously was markedly different from the one that ran Uncharted, and it took them a long time to get it running. So I think this is a really smart move. It's probably why Drake's Fortune took so long to come out, actually. So that's actually exciting. And we'll talk more about Naughty Dog in a little bit.
Foreshadowing.
Oh, going to talk about Uncharted 1.
Don't touch that dial, ladies and gentlemen.
We're going to talk about Among Thieves. Number 7. Sony CEO Kaz Arai was quoted as stating that the PlayStation 4 is being created and marketed as a games-first device, unlike Xbox One. Quote, "The most important thing we need to make sure we do, at least initially, is that we all agree and understand that the PS4 is a great video game console that appeals to video gamers. If we miss that part, then I don't think we get the initial establishment of the console." End quote. Smart man.
Is that not a ridiculous statement to have to make? Our games console is a games console that plays games for gamers.
Yeah, it's a way for them, I guess, to double down on the perceived blunder of the Xbox One reveal. I don't think it was quite the blunder everyone thinks it was, but
yeah,
I think it's smart. Like we always say, they can definitely win if they appeal to gamers, and if they don't try, then you know they can't win at all. So because they're not going to be Xbox at their own game, which isn't games. See what I did there?
Ah,
I'm confused.
It's okay. It didn't really make any sense anyway. Number 8.
We're like a pig inside a truffle. We don't know what's going on.
Well, that's fucked up. Number 8. That game company's second game for Sony, Flower, is officially coming to PlayStation Vita. Flower originally came to PS3 via PSN in 2009 and will be a Vita-bound later this year. And I think it'll be at E3, so we'll play it in just a few days.
It sounds cool. They added touch controls. It'll still have like the gyro or whatever. But
we should use the analog sticks in that game. That'll be
that'll be nice.
That was at a time when everyone still insisted on using six axes.
Oh, yeah, when Sony was like, guys, please, someone use six axes.
Like the grenade controls in Uncharted 1. Number 9, I think Uncharted 2 as well, right? You could just shut it off.
You could shut it off, yeah.
Yeah.
I think default it was off, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, it was stupid anyway. Number 9. I'm excited about this. Tales of Symphonia Chronicles is coming to PlayStation 3 in 2014. It's an HD re-release of the GameCube game Tales of Symphonia, bundled together with the 2008 follow-up Dawn of the New World. I used to play the shit out of that game on GameCube.
Was Symphonia the one that was based... No, that's Eternal Sonata, the one based on Chopin.
Yeah.
Not the same thing.
This was,
I always confuse those two.
Yeah.
This was...
I love Eternal Sonata.
Came out in 2004. I remember I was an intern here, and I wrote the guide for it, so I remember actually playing that game pretty well.
Pretty good.
Number 10. Stick It to the Man has been announced for PS3 and Vita. It's a puzzle platformer, and will launch later in 2013. We have a story about that on IGN screens and things of this nature. It looks kind of neat. It looks kind of like Tearaway, actually.
Dun, dun, dun.
But not the same.
When's Tearaway coming out?
Soon.
That's this year too, right?
I don't even know if I care.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest.
I care about Tearaway. Yeah, I care about Tearaway. It's Media Molecule, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Tearaway is one of those games where, and I think you even said this in the preview or whatever, like, once I am playing that game, I will care about it. But
October
22nd,
Tearaway.
Doesn't even seem like something you can really get the full experience from in a demo or anything like that.
Well, that's what Greg and I felt. When Greg and I went to LA a few months ago to play that and Killzone Mercenary. And the thing about those games is that Killzone Mercenary immediately grasps you and you understand it. And you're excited about it because it's finally a competent shooter, hopefully.
Yeah.
On the Vita, and Tearaway is like not a game you need to play with like a developer chattering in your ear for
exactly.
20 minutes
yeah,
about
yeah,
like
yeah.
what they're trying to do. It seems like a game that's a little more cerebral.
We are in a super controlled environment. Like, they showed a whole bunch of cool crap in the thing that we didn't get to do.
Do you remember when Little Big Planet was first being shown around a little bit, and they were being kind of tentatively showing you just a little bit? And the best you could say about it at that point was, well, it looks really interesting, and we hope it works. Yeah. And it's kind of the same for Terraway, isn't it?
Yeah,
you can't 100%. Really, can't really judge it at this point.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. The good news is that, I mean, in my opinion, is regardless of Terraway's success, Media Molecule's hedging, because I think only small teams working on that. They're clearly working on a PS4 game, so... And I don't think it's a Little Big Planet 3 because...
And it's not going to be strange dick sculpting.
Oh, yeah. We were at the...
How great would it be if it was?
Oh, of course we were, yeah. That was a strange moment. I was extremely jet-lagged, and that was a very strange... I think I might have fallen into micro-sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought I may have woken up in some strange alternate reality.
It's like a drug dream.
Media Molecule brings you strange dick sculpting.
That was just like... It was like exactly what you'd expect at a Media Molecule, I guess.
This is what you want British developers for. Come on with this shit.
I want to see what they're working on. That's, you know, the rumors. What Sumo is working on Little Big Planet 3, so yep.
Little Big Planet Universe,
yeah, like whatever it's going to be called. So they're not working, and they don't want to work on Little Big Planet anymore. So
I really hope it's not actually called Little Big Planet Universe.
Maybe we'll see it at E3.
I mean, I want something very different from Media Molecule, because Tearaway looks cool and charming and sweet, but it's still like in its core concept, at least what I understand of it, seems kind of like the same idea as Little Big Planet.
It's collage kind of creativity and kind of handcraft space. But the thing about Media Molecule is they're always going to be a developer that wants to do new cool stuff, and they kind of got hoisted by their own success because Little Big Planet turned out to be a really important game for PS3, and they ended up making more of them than they would have liked.
Yep.
So yeah, new stuff, please.
Yeah, I agree. Finally, number 11. Field Runners 2, the popular iOS tower defense game, has been announced for PS Vita and will launch later this year. Game looks... I never played it. It looks really cool. So I'm excited about that. Tower defense is always good.
It was a PlayStation Mini, too.
Number one. Yeah, well, the first one was PSP game, right? Yeah, a Mini.
Remember the Minis, Goldfarb? Remember the PSP Go?
They were
Go?
Great.
Remember the PSP Go?
So well.
PSP, I had forgotten about the
I
PSP
love the PSP Go.
Go.
You still have a drawer full of them.
Yeah.
He has a graveyard. Like a creepy graveyard of PSPs in his drawer, and they're like, all, his desk is like a fucking disaster, but then they're like nicely placed like in a row.
They're all spaced out. I have a name for each one of them.
It's very creepy.
I charge them just in case I'm ready to go with UMDs. I threw away some UMDs over the weekend.
Did you?
True story.
That's a big step for you to take.
Yeah, I know. It was. Yeah, I was cleaning out the closet. Yeah. I was like, I don't need this case anymore.
I finally got rid of my PSP. I had to peel off the jealous skins from
Beyond
200. Beyond, yeah.
Oh, man. I wonder if we'll have those at Beyond 300.
Oh, me too.
I've not played my PSP since I lost my Monster Hunter save game.
How'd you lose it?
The worst. Well, I left my PSP on a bus in Japan. So I did actually technically lose the PSP. Mm. But then I bought another PSP because I was like, no, it's all right, I'll start again and do it again. So I bought another PSP, like a Monster Hunter Special Limited Edition one, bought another copy of Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, played it for about 10 minutes and went, I'm not doing this again.
Exactly, yeah, that's
no
the
way.
Worst feeling.
That's
like
your
cloud
mate's
saves.
Too rare. Get the like, fuck out of here, monster.
Cloud saves have changed it a lot because like that isn't, I mean, obviously if you lose your Vita, it would be a problem still, but at
yeah,
least you wouldn't
yeah.
lose all your
you
like,
wouldn't lose your saves.
Right now, if I lost my 3DS and lost like the 70 hours I have in Animal Crossing, it would be devastating.
Yeah,
and there's no, like,
and Nintendo's it's
all
never
going to
have
that.
A system that lets you get your stuff back like PS Plus or Xbox Live have.
No
because
way.
Nintendo don't give a shit.
Yep.
A friend of mine got his DS stolen and had to like submit a police report to prove to Nintendo that it had been stolen so he could get his digital stuff back.
So they're
so
such
crazy.
A
weird
company.
They just
yeah,
discovered
they really
the internet. They just figured it out.
Yeah. Yep. Well, clearly.
And they're freaking out.
What's devastating is not losing the Animal Crossing save. What's devastating is that you played Animal Crossing for 70 hours.
It's so good.
It's really good.
It's really good.
It was good on GameCube.
Oh, you're good on GameCube.
You haven't played it yet.
I'm over it.
You're just a straight
it's
up
the
hater.
I'm sure it is
straight
the
up
same
hater.
Thing that was on Wii. With that microphone.
Tell me your
no, the Wii one's bad.
The Wii one is not that good.
The best one prior to this was the DS one,
yeah,
Wild World.
Wild World.
So good.
At least you don't have to use those. I remember, like, the GameCube one had, like, those, like, really, like, old school, like, codes that you had to go on GameFAQs and, like, trade people for shit, right?
That's
that
right.
was the game. That was so weird.
It's because it was, you know, it was a N64 game that they ported. Mm. So it didn't have any... You know, because could the GameCube go on the internet? I can't remember.
It had
a broadband adapter.
They didn't use
yeah.
any of that because it was code for a N64 game.
Right.
PlayStation podcast, everybody.
The oh, funny
we're yeah. a conversational podcast.
My favorite thing Nintendo ever did with codes, and I guess it was technically third party, was Golden Sun. To transfer from the first Golden Sun to the second Golden Sun, you had like this like 900 character code that you had to go one screen at a time and copy them down and then re-enter because it went from. What was it? I guess Game Boy Color to Game Boy Advance, and so you had to put it in. It was a big, stupid mess.
That's
codes.
It.
That's it.
Goldfarb.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what. That Tearaway, we're not sold on it yet. But eventually we're going to get our hot little hands and know everything about it and just devour it. But until then, if I wanted to know what was in stores, where would I go?
the official list of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms by the IGN editors.
Well done, that is correct. At retail, people, Remember Me is out.
I'd rather not.
That's too bad. That game looks really cool.
It's a cool idea.
It's one of those games that's... I'm going to buy it anyway, because it's interesting enough that I don't really care that it's not very good. Because it's not very good. Like, you can't really argue that it's a great game because it's not. But it's still really interesting. Hmm. So I think if you value originality over a game being like technically competent, then go buy it still.
It's kind of a shame because like I get so excited when I see new IPs, and especially going into a new generation, we're going to see more of them. But it's like it's a bummer when someone tries something really cool and ambitious and it doesn't work.
It's kind of a retelling of the French Revolution in a way, which is cool. That's a cool idea. And Nilin, the main character, is... I mean, the weird thing is some of it is so badly written, it's like you can't even understand. It's like there's like a wrestling scene. It's like, oh. Yeah. But then Nilin's really good and her monologues are really good and her character's great. So it's like, did someone write this and then just got given to somebody else and they were like, do you know what make this cooler? Wrestlers. Mm.
Well, the interesting thing about Remember Me, of course, was that it was a PS3 exclusive at one time.
That's right.
And then Capcom picked it up. You have to wonder, like, with Sony's track record with exclusives specifically ever since the disaster of the early exclusives, if they were like, no, we don't want this anymore. With Lair and Haze and all this shit.
Lair?
Lair
was
indeed.
Was that a dragon flying?
That was. Yeah, it was Six Nexus.
Greg loved that game.
Yeah, Greg loved that game.
I hear you love that game.
I did. I was a big Lair fan. I was one of the Lair. I had the exclusive review.
I have a Lair lighter somewhere.
These were more innocent times.
Mm. That's when we...
Can we have the exclusive review? Sure. Great. Okay. I'm going to give it a 4.9. Lol.
Let's see. That's it for retail. On PSN, Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon is available. I still have to play the one on Vita. And
it's fun. Same as the 360 one.
That's it, I guess, on PSN. PSP has a game, Class of Heroes 2.
Finally.
You can play that on
PSP. I thought, didn't Limbo just come out on Vita?
Yeah, I'm not there yet, though.
Oh.
See, I'm going up and down, you know.
Andy Goldfarb getting too big for his britches.
Goldfarb's getting a little ahead of himself. On Vita, Limbo.
Oh, wow.
Right here.
I hear that's a great game.
Yeah, it's
fantastic game. And Quel Memento is out, which is a puzzle game. PS2 Classics, Alfa Romeo Racing Italiano. I never even heard of that game.
What? Is that like that random Ford game that they made?
Yeah,
probably. It was like Italian for Ford shops.
And Ultimate Board Game Collection.
Is it Ultimate?
And probably none of the licensed board games. So the Ultimate Board Game Collection without Monopoly or any of the board games you've heard of.
I have no idea. Othello is probably in there, maybe.
Chinese checkers.
Anything that's not technically.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything that's in the common domain.
Yeah. The happy birthday song.
What on earth are the Limbo guys doing, apart from remaking Limbo for every conceivable console?
So they do have a new project.
They do, yeah. They've been making
Is hilarious to me, because they keep calling it Project 2, and like I see some sites reporting, like, it's called Project 2.
Really
and like,
is.
No, that's not the
that's
name of the game.
Second project.
But yeah, they told us around this time last year, actually, that it was 2 years away. So I'm guessing next year we'll see it.
And they won't show us anything before it's out. They're not that kind of dev.
There's one screenshot that came out through like a ratings board.
Oh,
but
I remember this. This was like forever ago.
Yeah, and it looks like the kid from Limbo grown up, basically. It's like a taller, more lean kid from Limbo. But it's on Unity, so it's scalable. So you will assume it could be on almost every platform if they wanted to. So we'll see.
Excellent.
I want to see what they can do.
I went to visit the Playdead chaps. I wrote a short book about them a couple of years ago. And they were working on their new thing. And they literally boarded up the room whenever I was in the building. They like blocked it off, locked it. Every time I was in a room, they'd be like, wait 2 seconds. And they'd take everything off the walls and
hide
it.
You could hear muffled voices.
See, they're protective.
Yeah, clearly. That's it for Roper Report. That's it for games coming out this week, Gregory.
But what comes out next week, Colin Moriarty?
I don't know.
Great.
I'm only kidding. The Last of Us comes out next
week. The Last of Us comes out next week, Friday, June 14th.
Mm, it's very exciting.
Big game from Naughty Dog, makers of Uncharted.
I'm so glad we can finally talk about it. We've had it for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's been a long time until we can say anything about it. Again, ladies and gentlemen, we are not going to spoil any story
elements no spoilers.
For you.
No spoilers. We will do a spoiler cast when we come back from E3.
Right.
And it'll be a video.
They put a bunch of stupid E3 stuff in the way of this, so... That sucks. But
is that why it's coming out on a Friday?
I don't know. It's a good question.
The theory was that they're going to announce some kind of PS3 price drop at E3. And so that way they can do like a bundle or something.
See,
kind of
Colin
thing.
And I did a video about it today because a lot of people tweeted at me today this morning asking why we were reviewing it now. Like, why? You're making the wait so much harder. And like, oh, blah, blah. And it's like, no, it's, you know, they want to build up all this momentum. They want you talking about it for a week. They're confident in this game.
It's a sign of confidence. Exactly. Yeah. When an embargo is last second, like when we don't get a copy until the game's coming out, that's usually a very bad sign. This early means they're confident that it's going to get all the tens.
And you
figure,
yeah, Far Cry 3 was like 3.5 weeks out.
Yeah.
The reviews hit because they were very confident.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, excellent.
That was probably too far out.
It's rare that you see an embargo this far out and then the game gets like fours.
Far out.
Far out.
Yeah, dude. Just kind of groovy embargo.
We figure now you get to hear about how great this is for a week. Then tomorrow or next week it's E3 and then E3 ends and you can't buy any of those cool games. What you sure can go buy The Last of Us.
The Last of Us.
Colin, you gave The Last of Us a 10.
I did.
Called it a masterpiece.
I did. I never even thought about so the interesting thing in all the games I reviewed, I've never even approached a 10 in my mind. I'm like, never did I encounter that. And when I started playing The Last of Us, I was like, this game's very impressive. It's very impressive. We were really enjoying it. We were talking about it more and more. It is probably the most immersive, atmospheric game I've ever played. And I think that you could nitpick little things about it that might be frustrating or technically wrong with it in some way.
Uh-huh.
But nothing breaks the immersion. Nothing makes you not want to play it. Nothing makes you not want to explore it. Nothing makes it not a marvel, if that makes any sense. It's an exceptional game. It really is. And it has, like, you know, I'm not the only one. It has, like, 27 tens, I think, right now.
Yeah, it's doing excellent.
So it's just one of those special games. A masterpiece, a 10 on IGN doesn't mean it doesn't have flaws. It means that you can't imagine a game being any better than that. And I really can't imagine a game being any better. It's PlayStation 3's best game.
Funny you say that. Michael Spivey writes in and says, Colin, in your review you said that it is now the PlayStation 3's top exclusive. So does that make it definitively PlayStation 3's best game, period?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it does. I mean, you know, there are amazing multi-platform games on PS3, of course. You know, I think about GTA or something like that.
Fallout
I really 3. Enjoy Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas. And Skyrim so much, not so much on PS3, but
yeah. Sorry about that.
There are a lot of great games on PS3, and PS3 also has a lot of great exclusives. And the reason I wanted to point out that it was the best exclusives is because PlayStation's known for its high tier exclusives, especially the last few years.
Right.
Really, since 2009, that was the first of 4 years we called the year of the PlayStation. If you remember correctly, that's when we broke out that. And every year was the year of the PlayStation after that. Never actually came true.
No. Always fucked it up somehow.
But when you think about Infamous or Killzone 3 or, you know, God of War 3, the Uncharted trilogy, this game's better than all of them, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And Naughty Dog, I think, is very clearly the best developer in the industry. They just make games that are significantly better than most other games.
And in several ways as well. Yeah. It's not just the technical side. It's the writing and the way that they have a grasp of interplay between several characters, I think, is what elevates them. Like, they just have a grasp of that's so far beyond what most people seem to be able to manage.
Yeah, and in this game especially, I mean, I'm not done with it yet. I'm at 81%, I think, so I'll hopefully be it tonight.
Kid.
The voice acting is... And I mean, like, Troy Baker, Ashley Johnson are incredible, but even supporting cast, like, it's just, like, all around, the voice acting is, like, ridiculously good.
Yeah, Ashley Johnson, I mean, like, first off, you know, Ashley Johnson has the best lines. She's been given the best lines as Ellie. Because a lot of times I think she reacts like we would or whatever. You know what I mean? There's a great part. I don't want to ruin anything. So there's a great thing in there for her. But especially Troy Baker's Joel. Like, having talked to Troy Baker, you know what I mean? Like, had a real conversation with him. I wouldn't – if I didn't know anything about the game, right, I would sit down and not know that was him.
100%.
His Joel does not sound like him at all.
Not only that, but talking to Troy Baker – and then hearing Snow and Booker and all these other characters he's played, you would certainly not ever connect Joel to that. Like, he sounds, and not only that, but like, I lived in Texas and he sounds so much like my friend's dad. Like, I mean, like, he just sounds like that Southern guy. And so, yeah,
friend's
he nailed it.
Up.
Yeah. He sounds exactly like him. But no, the game's great so far. I haven't beaten it yet, so I don't know if I can.
Well, we're not. Yeah. I mean, you get the idea of how the game feels at that point.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. I'm like just under 10 hours in, I think.
It's just an unreal game. I mean, I think we expected that it was going to be an excellent game, and I think that with the Uncharted 2, the core of the Uncharted 2 team working on this, it was the expectation was that it was going to be a phenomenal game, but we didn't know how good it was going to be. And like, when I reflected on the experience, it took me almost 18 hours to beat it. It took Greg about 15. I was like super meticulous going through it because I really wanted to explore this world. Everything's there for a reason. That's what's so cool about it. There's not just vacant corridors and rooms with fucking stupid furniture and you don't care. Like, there's pictures and kids' toys rotted out, you know, food on the counter, you know, like, people leave their shit in disarray. This house has probably been walked through by 100 survivors, picking through it, taking what they need or whatever. Everything's very thoughtfully put together. And what's really remarkable about the game is how quickly Naughty Dog makes these games. See, like, that's the other thing. We always talk about it when we compare them and we make fun of Team Ico all the time, you know? These guys haven't made a game since 2005, and that time, on, you know, Naughty Dog made Jack Racing, and then the Uncharted trilogy, and then The Last of Us. You know, the Uncharted games have Metacritics of like 90, 92, and 96 or something like that.
Yeah.
And now this game has a Metacritic of 95. Like, I don't know how they do it, but they do, and they do it very quickly. I don't think The Last of Us took more than 3 years to make. So, I don't know. There's something about it. You know, it really is one of the best games I've played in a long, long, long time. And I was talking to a lot of people about, you can approach games in two different ways and what makes games great. You can even talk about like sheer gameplay, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think a game like Symphony of the Night's a 10, but and it's got a great atmosphere, but it's really the way the game plays and its mechanics. You know, finding equipment and exploring this castle is like really fun. The game plays really well. Or Mega Man 3 is another good example. Like, my favorite game of all time is it's a gameplay experience. And The Last of Us is a gameplay experience, but really the presentational qualities are what make it shine. Mm. The game plays amazingly. There are games that play better than The Last of Us. But you don't care about that because everything around it has a meaning and a purpose.
It's the world building as well, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just a remarkable game, you know?
The way I talked about it, you know, I played it pretty much over a weekend. I had done a little bit ahead of time and then got really, you know, hours just sitting on the couch over the weekend. And when I was getting ready into the final section of the game, when it's all coming to a close or whatever, I stopped to make lunch and I went out and there's this scene that kind of encaps all this horrible stuff you've gone through, right? And there's like this one moment of like sunshine or whatever. And I went out and I walked the dog and I was just thinking about how perfect that was getting out of where we just were and how horrible everything was. But then like I started thinking back over like all the hours I had been playing, right? Of like all the things these characters had been through, and it really struck me what a journey it was. And obviously literally when we found out that it was a cross country excursion, we're like, oh, well, you'll be seeing all these different things and that's cool. And you're climbing over crap. But I mean, like, just the range of emotions you've felt with these characters, what they've gone through, how you've seen them grow and change, it's amazing. Mm. That was the thing that blew me away. Mm. Let's go to another question, Colin. Jack writes and he says, Colin, while you not only broke the news on The Last of Us trophies, you also delivered an excellent review.
Thank you.
There's still one question on my mind. How are said trophies? Do you see yourself getting platinum?
Yeah, I'll platinum it. It's gonna be harder than the Uncharted games.
It's a trek, man.
I have one trophy so far in that game.
What did you get? Which one?
For crafting one of everything.
I didn't get a solitary trophy until I beat it. Wow. Like, I didn't find everything.
There's not like a trophy for completing each chapter or anything like that. It doesn't work.
And
like
for a while, I thought it was turned off. And then I was just like, oh, no, I'm just not hitting the milestones. Because there's not a million trophies in the game. It's not one of those games that's not. Like, here's a ton of bronzes. It's like, hey.
There's a lot of golds.
Yeah.
And I give them a lot of credit for that because it would have been really stupid to do, like for this kind of immersive game where, like, the atmosphere is, like ding, what you're enjoying ding. About it. Exactly. It's like, oh, you shivved 10 clickers. Like, I mean, it would have broken the immersion, I think. So this was a better approach that, it actually like scared the crap out of me when that trophy popped because I was like in a really intense situation and I crafted like a smoke bomb or something and then the trophy popped and it like scared the shit out of me because I'm like, as stupid as that sounds, like I'm not used to hearing that at that point in the game because it was like 8 hours in by the time I heard a trophy click.
So Colin, how many did you get through in your 18-hour playthrough?
I got that one, the one for crafting, and I got I have some multiplayer trophies too.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, but then I got the trophy for a silver trophy for beating it. I'm not sure if the trophies stack. They do? I wasn't paying attention when I got those trophies.
But like, here's the thing about it is that they stack. Did you play it on hard?
I would have played it on hard.
Yeah, when we review, you usually play on normal. So you play on normal, which unlocks Survivor. So you can play on Survivor now to get the hard trophy, but that's just on that one game. So when you go New Game Plus, you start on normal again. Shit. So you're going to have to play it again. You go back to the other game, play it on Survivor, and then you go back to New Game Plus, you play it through.
So you would have to do three playthroughs.
See, I mean, that's the beauty of the game, though, is that you can get through it in so many different ways. I mean, it's a linear game, but you can get through it in so many different ways that it makes you want to play it over and over again. I know I felt I wrote about this a little bit where I felt a real feeling of frustration.
Yeah.
When I would be seen. Like when I'm slinking around, I'm being very meticulous and I'm there for 15 minutes and these guys are slinking around. I'm like being very careful and I'm shipping them or strangling them very slowly. And then someone sees you and it's like, well, I'm going to go forward. That's kind of the way the cookie crust crumbles or whatever. But I kind of want to go back and play it again and see if no one will see me the next time. You know what I mean? And then you could take the guns blazing approach. Or you could just melee the shit out of people. Or you could just go through parts without fighting anyone at all, which is something I rarely did.
Yeah.
But you could.
Yeah, for me, it's the exact opposite. It's like how you talked about Journey and Walking Dead. Like, my experience with it was my experience with it, and I don't want to really double back to that, too. That's the whole thing. When I was like, oh, maybe I'm not getting the trophies, I didn't jump in to see if I was getting them. I was just like, that's not why this game exists.
Yeah,
to me.
It yeah. certainly is a game I didn't give a shit about the trophies in.
Yeah, I didn't want to have to be like. It's not the kind of game that you should play like with a trophy guide in front of you. Like,
well,
don't
you're gonna
do it
have
that
to.
Way.
Well, I mean, I think you'd have to get all the collectibles if you want.
Probably.
If you're going for that platinum.
That's yeah. the thing is, I can't believe how many collectibles I missed.
Right.
The,
yeah.
So the one thing is the chapters on. It's on. It's not like Uncharted where the chapters unlock when you beat the game. You can't see the chapter list until you beat the game.
It also doesn't tell you like, oh, chapter six. Like, I mean, you're playing
yeah,
through seamlessly as
yeah,
it's
that's
going.
Cool. So it's different on Uncharted in that sense. But when you go into the list. It tells you like everything you've missed, and I'm like, I can't believe I missed anything. Like, that's what's so exciting about it too. It's like, what didn't I see?
Yeah, that's like, very true. Is that this is the first like you know, Colin in charge of the PlayStation beat now. I'm out here doing my crazy videos and stuff. So this is the first Naughty Dog game I was able to beat, and then literally immediately start talking to Naughty Dog about. Right, I wasn't reviewing it. I didn't give a flying fuck. So I was like talking. That was like crazy, but like. The bonus to that was, like, I beat it, and I was direct messaging and texting people and getting on the phone with certain people. And one of them was like, well, did you see this? And I was like, no, I didn't. So I got to run back and load my save and go check that. I'm like, holy shit, this is so crazy.
Yeah, there's little things everywhere in the
there's
game.
There's tons of stuff. It's going to be one of those games where people are going to, like, people are going to start putting it out, like, did you see this? Did you see that? When you were finally through this one spot, I went and I was like, all right, well, did you see X, Y, and Z? Because I had been looking for this thing the whole time, and I finally found the evidence I was looking for, and I was excited about that.
That's kind of like Bioshock Infinite. That was a game that, because it's very rare in a directed, kind of linear structure game that you miss stuff, you know, because usually it's like, hey, look, we've made this, look at it, we made it. But with Bioshock Infinite, when I finished that, and then I was talking to people about it, and they were like, well, you missed this, you didn't see this, you didn't see that, did you, all the codec things, didn't even
the
see
voxophones.
That.
Exactly, the yeah. voxophones tell, like, even amazing just some stories. Of the vignettes about, like, the woman who's married to a handyman, and little things that have literally nothing to do with the core story, but it's, like, over the course, they build up to a separate thing, yeah.
A friend of mine didn't get the little thing with the little folk song on the guitar in the basement.
Oh, yeah.
That. So, yeah, Last of Us... It's really rare to have.
And Last of Us has stuff like that too. Yeah, like that's awesome. you will find little written notes from people or things in houses that
find that stuff, because that for me was the best
for sure.
There,
it adds a lot. Yeah,
there. I don't. Again, this sucks that you can't. I still don't want to talk about it. But there was like for real, like the opening's like, you know, there's all these emotional moments throughout this game. But like the first one that made me pause the game and like react to my life was a note I found. It wasn't even like something crazy. Like I saw Ellie do this, that, or the other.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing about the notes and you find voice recorders and all these things, you know, comic books and all sorts of things in the game is that they're all handwritten. You know, and it's not the first game to do that. There are some games that really pay attention to presentation that do something like that. But the notes are all, you know, handwritten. They're crumbled. They got...
They're not in Comic Sans.
They're weathered. You know, some of them have been sitting here for a long time. And what's really cool is that, like, a lot of these tell stories about people you never meet, maybe you're in their house or like you're where they lived for several years after the pandemic. And the other cool thing about the game that I think people are really going to appreciate, I think that I appreciated in this game more than any other game I've ever played, is that the enemies feel human, and you're uncomfortable killing them.
Well, it's not even that the enemies feel human, it's that the human elements, so the human enemies feel human, and obviously the clickers, the infected do not, and it is like a marked difference when you're fighting them, because you almost alternate, you know, you might go through a long section where it's all infected, and then suddenly you come up on humans, and you have to use a totally different strategy, like you can't sneak up on them the same way, you have to do everything differently, like against humans I almost entirely use guns, against infected I never used guns. And so, like, it's, like, really interesting just kind of adapting your strategy.
In terms of how you feel about killing them as well, like, all good zombie fiction anyway plays with this thing of, like, is there still an element of human in there? Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think for a lot of people, the problem with zombie fiction is, like, this immediate switch that people have where they're like, oh, zombies now, let's do killing. And The Last of Us deals with that very well, because the inhumanity of the clickers, of the infected, is so well expressed. They are so creepy, the way they move, the way that... And you then relate to... Because without spoiling anything, Joel's been through a lot, like, and you relate to all the things that he's had to do, and you've got that distinction between you've got the danger that is the infected and the danger that is other people, the man's inhumanity to man aspect. Actually, reminded me a little bit of The Road.
That's the first sentence in my review is that it's the analog to The Road. Like, it is The Road in many ways. I mean, it's instead of a father and a son, it's a man and a little girl that have a parental sort of relationship that evolves. But yeah, I love how uncomfortable it is to like strangle a dude and he's grasping at, it's not like a guy that like it just collapses like an accordion, like one of many soldiers or something. It's like he's grasping at your arm. You stab him in the neck, he's gurgling and like he's begging for his life and stuff like that. Like even the clickers Or actually, the runners like somehow become cognizant when you're fighting them.
You hear them yelling and stuff. Yeah,
they talked about this. This isn't a spoiler for the game because it's been in previews since the first time I went hands on and actually saw these guys in action. Is the fact the runners, when they're not in an agitated state and don't know you're around, the idea is that the virus, the cordyceps, the fungus are growing out of them and they're changing and they're still somehow a little bit cognizant of what you do. So you walk into rooms with them and they're standing there and they're just sobbing and moaning and like it's like holy fucking shit.
It's creepy. Yeah, and the clickers are horrifying. Like I there's a very specific time the first time you meet them and it's you don't have to fight them at all. I think they're there to kind of like for the developer to kind of be like, hey, here they are. And like, if you want to mess with them.
It's like a big daddy in Bioshock 1 sort of thing. Yeah.
And they're just terrifying. Like every time you see them and you see them skulking about a map or whatever, it's like, God damn it. Like these guys are horrifying because they can't see you. They hear you. So like you could flash them with a flashlight and do all these things. But like you can't make any noise, you know, and you could be right next to them.
Yeah, that was the really fucked up part of like when they introduce these guys and explain to them that, you know, they only see you if you move. So there's times where you're just crouched down and they're like walking past you and you're like, are they going to sense that I'm here? Because if it's like anything, right? It's like if you're moving around a room, sometimes you sense things in the dark, right? It's the same thing.
It's it's also that's where like the resource scarcity comes in because it is really insanely like sometimes you are out of everything and you have to find a creative way to get past the situation. And like with clickers, like you know you can use a shiv to take them down, but if you don't have one and if you only have like one hit left on your melee weapon, like you suddenly have to rethink your entire strategy, and it's like it's nerve wracking. Like there are parts of that game that are actually, you know, it's not like a horror game necessarily, but that are legitimately scary and tense because like, you don't know how to get out.
I think it's a horror game.
I thought it was survival horror for sure in the middle of it because there
are sections of it that absolutely feel like survival horror to me. Mm-hmm. But then there are other sections that, I don't know, it just feels like a general adventure game. Like, I feel like it actually kind of – it transcends those genres in a really interesting way.
Because it's like it takes elements of, you know, a roller coaster action game like Uncharted, and it takes elements of survival horror. And just like, this is what we are. This is what I am.
There was one sequence I talked to you about the next day where I was like, it felt more Resident Evil than the past few Resident Evil games I've played.
Yeah, I mean, it embraces this sort of this dystopian, like, post-apocalyptic thing. It, like, doesn't let up at all. And that's why it's, like, The Road to me. Because, like, if you haven't read The Road by Cormac McCarthy, it's really one of the great modern books that I've read anyway. And it is a book that is just dark. It is just dire. And it just doesn't get better at all. It's like what we talk about with The Resistance, but, you know, like, where Resistance just gets worse and worse. Like,
I was devastated by The Road. I remember finishing, because it's a very short book, and it's in quite, you know, it's quite, in quite large print as well. So it's like a 250-page book you can read in a couple hours.
I read it overnight.
I read it on a train, not knowing. I just, like, because I was Cormac McCarthy, obviously one of the great American novelists, and I was, you know, like, oh, I will read this one, I'll pick this. And I read it on a train, and I was devastated. I was on my way to a meeting on a train. I got off the train, like, couldn't really think properly, like absolutely devastated, having to go to this meeting and try not to think about the book. It was terrible. Also, Cormac McCarthy, interesting, was the inspiration for The Last of Us, because they came out of No Country for Old Men and thought, we can do that, we can do something like that, we can do something that's that meaningful.
It definitely has that effect too. Like, I mean, I've so far I've had two long sittings, and I think I can beat it in one more single sitting probably, and maybe, I don't know, we'll see how much I play tonight.
Mind,
like,
where you are.
Mind where I am?
Mime
where
I'm joking.
I am.
There's no way. What are you gonna do?
I mean, I'll tell you. I kind of could. I don't think I could. No, spoilers. No, but anyway, what I was going to say is like that feeling where it's like, it's just like this weight on you, like the events you've gone through when you're thinking about everything that's happened. Like, I keep coming in every morning having to pull Colin to a meeting room and just have this like terrible stream of consciousness because I need to talk to somebody about like what these people have gone through. Yeah, because it's just like, it's so hard to just like hold that weight, as stupid as it sounds. Like, you're so connected to these characters so quickly that like the shit they go through, you're like, holy crap, like it weighs on you so heavily. And I can't wait to see where it ends up. I'm really excited.
I'm looking forward to it too. I'm excited for everyone out there to play it. I'm gonna say this, I'm gonna make a request to Podcast Beyond listeners: play the game and be in a dark room, maybe put on your headphones.
Yeah, if you have headphones, for sure. The sound is,
that's
amazing.
How I'm playing it.
And don't rush, explore. Yep. Explore everything. Go in every room. Use your shivs to open the shiv doors that you find. Read the notes. Like, pour through everything. You know, upgrade your weapons. Upgrade Joel. Take your time with the game. Because you could run through the game in 10 to 12 hours, probably. But, like, that's not fun. You know, do it later when you're speedrunning or doing your new game plus or whatever. But, like, the first time you play it the way it's meant to be played and really take it in. I'm telling you, you're not going to have an experience like this anytime soon again, I don't think, on a video game. So,
and not only that, but when you're going through rooms, don't even just, like, explore everywhere for collectibles. But also, like, if you step back and actually look at, like, the design in some of those rooms, just the environments themselves, like, without telling an actual story, just from, like, what's going on in that room, it tells a little story. Like, I mean,
mental narrative.
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
New buzzword.
I don't know if this would be considered spoilers, so I'll wait. But, yeah, there's stuff in certain places where I was just like, wow, that's, like, in one thing you see tells a story, and you know exactly what happened to the people who used to live there, and it's, like, fucking brutal and devastating.
And that's the thing games should... that's the thing games should do more. And it's the thing games can do that can be done to a limited extent in film... and not really in books. Like, you know, they can have incidental stuff that you can either find or not, and that tells a story through just existing. You know, you need to physically describe something as a writer in a book. You need to physically show something in a film. But, you know, games can do environmental emergent narrative like that, like nothing else can. Fallout's always been very good at it, too.
Yep, Fallout, and like, all Bethesda games. Yeah. I mean, and it's funny that you mentioned Bioshock Infinite earlier. Like, once we can talk spoilers, you know, not even story-wise, but just, like, the progression of the game and the mechanics of the game have a lot of really interesting things in common with that I think are going to be kind of fascinating to explore.
And the other thing, Greg, that I want to say, just real quick before we move on, is that a lot of people have been very distressed online about spoilers for The Last of Us.
Funny you say that. Easton writes into beyond.ign.com, I may have gotten The Last of Us spoiled for me through reading comments on the IGN video. While I quickly looked away after the first few words, what was revealed to me makes me less excited to play the game. It may have been some troll looking for fake spoilers, but I somehow doubt it. My question is, even though I was exposed to what may have been a major spoiler, is the game still worth experiencing, and will the rest of the game be fresh enough to justify a purchase?
All right, that's an insane question.
It is, but here's the thing that I'm I've observed, because we've read some things about the game before it came out. Remember, we were talking about, like, accidental spoilers that we read, and then people.
I only ran into one, and it was in the heat of everybody's like, there's spoilers everywhere, and like there it was. Based on the fact these cutscenes got leaked whatever, there was descriptions of cutscenes. The file names through the demo were leaked.
But here's the thing about all of this, at least from what I've seen both before and today.
Yeah.
Because people have been, you know, asking me, like, is this really a spoiler? And someone even linked me to an article where it's like the five biggest Last of Us spoilers. I haven't read one real spoiler yet. Not one. There's like a million fake spoilers out there. Like, someone wrote into Beyond Today and he's like, here's the spoiler. If you scroll down, can you tell me if it's real? I'm like, this is totally fucking fake. This isn't even in the game.
That's almost exciting.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly right. So I kind of feel like a lot of the spoilers are just totally bullshit. Like, the article that the dude sent me about, like, the five biggest The Last of Us spoilers, four of them were, like, not even remotely true.
Yeah.
So, and one of them was kind of true. So what I'm saying is, dodge the spoilers. Don't feed into that shit. But don't worry if you saw something, because I'm telling you, chances are. I'm not saying there aren't real spoilers.
Sure,
because I'm sure there are. But you may think that the game has been spoiled, and it's really not been.
No, yeah, exactly. Nothing. I mean, like, if there's on the one of the guys who wrote in, maybe there was multiple. I don't know, that I saw when I was doing the emails here about it. You know, part of the spoiler he said was true. But it's a part of the spoiler. One of the hypotheses we've been doing since, like, the second Rewind Theater. Like, it's not like nobody has spoiled the end of the game that I've saw. The spoiler we saw, months ago when this all happened, was a definitive, here's how the game ends, bam. And, like, when I was playing through the game, it was totally out of my mind. I didn't even think about it. And then when I beat the game, I was like, oh, wait a second. By the way, that spoiler wasn't even true. You're on a journey here. It doesn't matter if you know where you're going. It's how you get there.
A lot of people looking for attention out there with a bunch of bullshit is basically what I'm saying. So,
our job.
Can that be the Podcast Beyond tagline? Podcast Beyond.
Looking for attention with a lot of bullshit. It's good.
So that's it. Enjoy. We won't be able to talk to you about it next week because we'll be at E3. Podcast Beyond will be happening next week, though. We'll have Shuhei Yoshida as we do every
Our week. Annual Shuhei Yoshida Roundtable. I hope he brings another crazy colored Vita.
Yep. So I was saying to Colin, my prediction, on February 23rd, like a few days after the event or whatever, was that the first time we touched the controller would be at the Shuhei Beyond.
Under his tutelage.
I now know that that's not true. But so.
Oh, sad times.
Well, wait, you already touched close. It?
Well, we will have by then.
Yeah.
I have a Vita sticker from E3 2011 that says I touched it. It has a little Vita logo.
All right, we got 30 minutes left, at least. Mm. We better kick it in overdrive with the topic of the week. Annual E3 predictions. We go around the room.
I forgot
PlayStation
we were doing
E3
that.
Predictions. We each make one. We each have five.
Mm-hmm.
Colin, you can do the honors.
You want me to start?
Yeah. And we'll go
what
far.
What do I begin with?
Give me a PlayStation Vita one.
Okay.
That's where I want to start.
Okay.
Give me the little appetizer.
Okay. This is kind of a two-parter. Just because there are two games.
Here we go. This is where we get into the goddamn...
the point
Colin
three.
Gets 0.25 points.
Two big PS3 or PlayStation franchises will migrate to PlayStation Vita. And both games will be announced at E3. One is Infamous, and the other is God of War. And they will be announced and will be released later this year.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
so that's like a three-part. You
mean migrate or divert?
You suck.
That's... Well, they're not going to be existing games. The franchise will now appear for the first time on Vita. No, we can do it like this. You can't just say, like, one definitive thing. But you have to,
yeah, because that makes sense and be fast and be fun. But you're like, oh, two games will be announced. So there's two predictions, and they'll be released this year. Two more. Great. There, Colin spent four of his five in one breath.
Your go.
One of mine actually was also God of War on Vita. I think that is absolutely happening, and this is the time for it.
So. Ready at Dawn?
So Ready at Dawn had said they were moving on. Remember, they made that big deal out of sending back their PSP dev kits.
But that was years ago. Didn't they do... They said that, and then they put out the next God of War.
Yeah, that's right.
Was in between years.
I mean, maybe it's Ready at Dawn. Ready at Dawn job listings forever ago suggested they were working on a console game.
And they were going to send back their dev kit. They looked at their hard drive. They're like, oh, we made a game on here. We should release this.
Oh, man, we did a lot.
And remember, they were prominently in the development
logo,
of the
yeah.
PS4. Well, like, one of their guys, like, the head of the studio was in that that reel where, like, everyone was talking about the PS4.
Yeah. I mean, and they did. They had job listings. This was, like, a year ago now that said next-gen console game. But whoever makes it, I do think it's – God of War makes sense on Vita now because a PS4 God of War, like, God of War Ascension came out this year, you know? And so I think it would be kind of weird to already have another one. But we'll see.
Yeah. I think you have to have something.
Yeah.
Buy this system and, like, Kratos sell systems.
Well, and – yeah. We'll get to that.
Oh!
Hello.
Damn. Keza?
I'm going to stick my neck out and say we're going to get a price for PS4.
Oh, okay.
I think it's going to be about $450 US. But I'm going to just say we're going to get a price. That's my prediction.
Okay. I like that. $450, how do we feel about that price?
We'll see. Because I have a guess, too.
Ah!
Damn.
I'm saying they show PlayStation 4 Uncharted debut. Okay. Whether it be trailer, whether it be a gameplay demo.
Or probably logo. Just a trailer. We all love logos.
No logo. They won't just do a logo. Evan Wells is going to come out and be like, you've heard about The Last of Us, huh? Let me show you the prequel to The Last of Us Uncharted 4.
The many of us. where do I go from here?
I don't know. Another 12-part prediction. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. PlayStation 4 will get a release date and it will get a price. $399 US, one SKU only. It will come out on November 12th in the United
States. That's terrifying.
That was very specific.
You are resting in your specificity.
Okay.
Just an amazing little flourish of story out there. It was awesome.
So I addressed this last week, but I want to make it official on the record. There will not be a Vita price cut. Instead, they will add value by just releasing bundles to hell. But it will still cost $250 to get a Vita.
Okay.
I think you'll get money off of Vita when you buy a PlayStation 4.
Ooh.
Mm. I think there'll be an incentive program.
Do you think there'll be a bundle?
Ooh,
or is that too crazy?
That's too crazy. That would be too much money.
We had a question forever ago. Someone was like, do you think the PS4 will come with a Vita? And no, absolutely not.
But I think that they will incentivize you to get one, and I think that might be monetary. Or you'll get loads of free games if you buy a Vita once you bought a PS4. But there'll be an incentive.
Smart.
Two SKUs for PlayStation 4.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's right.
$1 and $10,000.
That's it?
Yeah. I know how to make a prediction that is to the point.
Uncharted 4 will be revealed. It will be shown in trailer form. It will be dated 2014.
I love how they get, like, narrower and narrower.
It's like a clues for a quiz show.
Now remember, Mitchell Morgan, when you're grading these, if all of them come true, he doesn't get 3 points. He gets 1 point.
I say no Uncharted 4. No logo, no anything. Uncharted 4 will not be at the conference.
Not even a one more thing, and it's just Drake.
I agree. There's going to be no Uncharted 4, but obviously that's not a separate prediction.
Yeah.
I predict that there will be 4 new indie games, excellent indie games, that are PlayStation Vita or PS4 exclusives, not just being taken over.
Wow.
That'll be big.
Yep.
I'll continue on this exclusive train. EA is going to come out and show a bunch of dumb games we don't care about and give us a bunch of dumb exclusives we don't care about. Here's Battlefield 4. You're going to get a fucking helmet if you get it on PS3.
Oh, so you mean like incentive, like DLC and stuff like that.
Right, exactly. Like their Dead Space stuff where, and this game's got included on the Dead Space disc.
in my opinion, I think EA is the one company that will not do that because they were just at the Microsoft thing. They, you know, the rumor is that Respawn's game is Xbox exclusive. So your prediction sucks.
No, I like the conversation, but I'm a student of history.
Okay,
and I know how dumb these things go.
Yeah, I mean, Battlefield 3 had a week exclusivity on PS3.
Yeah, the DLC and stuff, and then Dead Space.
True. Do you think Mark Kearney's had any sleep since the last last appearance he made in public?
Definitely not. He's just working on Knack.
God, I gotta make this game now.
The guy looked like he hadn't had any sleep in 8 months.
I know. Yeah.
It was especially scary in person. Like we were reasonably up close, and he just looked so dead.
Yeah, it was fun. He was. I liked his passion on the.
Oh yeah, I love that guy. But just someone should let him sleep. Yeah. There should be like a petition somewhere. Allow Mark Kearney to sleep.
It reminds me of the way Nintendo probably treats Miyamoto.
Wheels him out. He's like, I don't even know where I am anymore.
Yeah. There's some story that Rich always tells about how, like, apparently he used to ride his bike to work, and at a certain point they're like, you can't do that anymore, you're too valuable. And he got interviewed by, like, I don't even remember who it was, but, like, he just had this sad quote where he was like, yeah, I used to love... They were like, what do you do for fun? He's like, I used to love riding my bike, but I can no longer do it.
Asset protected, isn't it?
That's amazing.
God.
My fourth prediction.
Here we go. Pack a lunch.
PlayStation Vita will get a price cut effective immediately upon announcement for $199.
I love this. I like that we have directly conflicting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like
that's
this.
Good.
All Destiny DLC will be exclusive to PS4 for 30 days.
Mm. Was that part of the leaked document or no?
No. Okay. No, it was the opposite. It was that it was going to be exclusive to Xbox 720 at the time for 1 year, which obviously didn't happen.
Interesting.
You know, Call of Duty, for example, when they announced Call of Duty Ghosts, they were like, tune in on May 21st for the Xbox reveal. And then obviously they renewed their 30-day exclusivity thing with Activision and Microsoft. Like you always say, like they're to the point, they're butting up against that line where Sony's going to be like, what the fuck are you doing? And get really angry at Activision. In the Destiny trailer, they were like, watch the Sony conference, see the worldwide gameplay reveal of Destiny. I think they'll give them the same deal, but for this game.
Mm. Okay.
Square Enix is going to come out with Final Fantasy, but it will be restored as an exclusive to Sony. I think Final
Please
Fantasy's
be excited for
E3.
That was the best. That was the best thing at part
so
of that
please
conference.
Please be excited. It was great.
What the fuck?
Great. Sony Ben comes out, shows their next PlayStation Vita game. It is not Uncharted Golden Abyss 2. Or Uncharted.
Mm. That's funny you talk about Sony Bend.
Mm, hilarious.
Sony Bend will come out.
Yeah.
They will reveal Siphon Filter Rebooted for PlayStation 4.
Ah.
Authoritative scoring out of predictions. Just throw them a face now. Just...
I will get 0.5 points for it.
Well, Colin, it's funny that you mentioned Sony Bend, because I say Final Fantasy will not be exclusive to the PlayStation 4. I think it'll be multi-platform. I mean, because they announced for PS4, I'm sure it will be at the conference or whatever, but yeah, I think it will also be on on Xbox One.
I was going to go Vita price cut, so I'm going to have to think of a new one now.
You can double down.
Yeah, I doubled up with God of War Vita.
It's true.
Well, it's because, again, Moriarty like lists everything that could happen.
You're so mad.
Jack Trenton might be there, and Kaz will step up at some point. Jack Trenton's eye will be blue.
I reckon there will be Ridge Racer.
Oh.
The one that was announced already?
Oh, wait, they were announced Ridge Racer. Right, that's no good. How about Little Big Planet, new Little Big Planet?
Oh, okay.
I'm going to predict that as that's shown possible. In trailer form.
Is it a PS4 game?
I think it's a PS4 game. I think it's a PS4 game that's also a Vita game.
Hmm. That's what's up.
I jumped around. I moved my predictions around, so I'm ending on a complete wet fart nobody cares about. But it's one people tweet all the time.
Pepon Vita.
Oh, fuck. That wasn't going to be it.
Viva Pina. Oh, no.
No, yeah. Okay, I'll change it. I'll sub in the Greg Miller hopes and dreams that there will be a Patapon game announced for some PlayStation
that
platform.
That series is dead, Greg.
No way. What do you like?
I'm picturing this moment where Greg, like the professional Greg Miller, is on camera watching the conference. We have his reactions, and they announce Patapon, and everyone's rolling their eyes, checking their phones, and Greg's in tears. He's just so happy.
We've been beating his chest.
Hey, I held it together in the PlayStation 4 reveal, except for when I heard Nate Fox's voice. As soon as I heard his, I was like, and Damon's like, what? I'm like, it's called the Infamous! It's Nate Fox! So there you go, ladies and gentlemen.
What was the one that doesn't count, but that you? What was
people tweet all the time asking if there's going to be a Vita redesign. There will not be a Vita redesign.
Not yet. No. There will be one day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
what's going to even do to it?
Exactly.
Even bigger,
lighter.
Make
it lighter.
I mean, or not use an OLED screen. Like I mean,
think better battery.
Yeah.
Mm. I think HDMI out is going to be on the redesign.
It's not bad.
or mini HDMI. But you don't. Well, so you have to buy really old.
I mean, yeah. I can see something them changing components and changing out ports, but I don't think the actual design of it. Like, if we're talking like, you know, like if you think of like PSP 2000 to 3000, sure, something like that, I can obviously see happening. But I can't see like 3000 to go. Like, I can't see like
huge
form factor
change. But we all saw how much
they
loved to iterate on the PSP.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
About.
That will eventually, if you consider that a redesign, sure, they'll eventually
but then
add some
ports. They only started iterating on the PSP once it had sold so many that they'd kind of run out of Japanese people to sell PSPs to, and they had to put new stuff on it.
But you figure if they can figure out a way to make it cheaper and do this, that, and the other. Yeah.
But that's the thing. When they went from, like, the FAT to the second to, what, the 1000, 2000, it was awesome. And it was, like, kind of like the original DS to the DS Lite kind of change. But with Vita, like, I think, for me at least, it's pretty much perfect form factor-wise.
It is. It's gorgeous.
Like, I don't feel like it's gorgeous, too fat or too heavy or anything.
Gorgeous.
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 So, ladies and gentlemen, what are your E3 predictions? Let us know in the comments on this podcast. Go to the article. Remember, we make an article. Go there and leave your comments there. Make sure you tweeted us, but we'll get that out. Here's what we got, Colin.
Okay.
Got 19 minutes before 4 o'clock.
Okay.
We've done an hour-long podcast already, though. Okay. What do you want to do? You want to hang in there? You want to keep going? You want to take the 19 minutes back to your desk and do something?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. I got some things to take care of. What do you think?
A quick question? Anything interesting?
I just closed the question box because I was going to go find something else. Hold on. I'll reopen it, though. Fill time. Talk to Keza about cookies.
Hey, Keza. Hey, wait, cookies?
About shit. I got answers. I don't have cookies.
Are we going to trade Nintendo items? Did you look at my list?
Yeah, I don't have any of the stuff you want.
Okay. I'll still give you a Samus helmet if you want it.
I still want that Samus helmet.
Okay. Greg, I have a bunch of Animal Crossing stuff for you, too, because your house is so sad and empty.
I did street pass Greg's house, and I went in and I was like, oh.
Yeah. You have the Pikmin thing I need, though. Obsessing. I could trade you some cool Zelda stuff or something.
Yes. I'd like to defend my house's honor. What happened is I went to a wedding, and I played it all the way there and all the way back, and then I landed, and the gameplay lab was like, we need your cart for capture. So I haven't played Animal Crossing in like a week and a half. That's okay. Why there's another guy in there posting things on my wall saying how bad I am. But I swear to God, it's fine. Everything will be fine. All the questions are about Last of Us. Here's quickfire last of a question from Ikabli. How about that? Well, I misclicked. Oh my.
Jesus Christ.
It's a misclick. It's a misclick. It's not, okay. It happens to all of us.
You know, I swear this is my first time. All right. Ikabli's quick hit questions for you, Colin.
Okay.
Number one. Playing the demo that came on God of War Ascension, I noticed how chatty all the characters are. While there is no reason not develop characters through dialogue, I noticed how loud they would come across, even while in the vicinity of clickers. This goes against the feeling that these guys need to move across the cities like ghosts. Doesn't this tend to break the immersion of the story?
I guess so. I didn't really experience anything quite like that. The one immersion-breaking thing that I did experience, which only happened a few times, and it's easy to look past because it really doesn't ruin the experience at all, but it's interesting, is especially with Ellie when she's moving around environments and you're slinking around, if the AI gets caught, like your friendly AI gets caught in an awkward place, she'll like run right in front of someone.
Yeah,
they won't see her because they know that that's totally unfair. It would have been nice if they like maybe, you know,
they should have either. It's the risk you run, right? We all hate escort missions. We talk about that all the time, right? So that we've all played those games where you have to put somebody in a dumpster and then go play the game. So they have to either have it where she stands all the way in the back and out of sight, and then that's kind of weird because you don't want to leave this girl.
That's the Elizabeth effect, where Elizabeth just kind of got ignored, although that kind of makes sense within the context of the game.
Sure. I mean, I do think it's not like an escort mission where you have to constantly protect her or anything, but there are...
She contributes.
She contributes, but there are situations in The Last of Us where you have to assist an AI companion. Like, that is a thing that happens.
But,
like,
I mean, I had it where straight up Tess ran into a clicker, and the clicker doesn't react or notice her. But you figure for me then, what? I think it happened one other time. It's like 90%, 95% of the time I played, it was no big deal. And I liked having them around, and I did like the, hey, asshole, and she'd throw something, or found this. I totally nailed that guy. Exactly. Yeah. Nothing.
It's funny, and I mean, I keep saying this, but like, you do get all these shades of Elizabeth, though, when she's like, hey, can you use this, and hands you a health kit, and it's like a really similar mechanic that you need. I think it's a really smart way to evolve how AI works in a game.
Sure.
Because, I mean, like, it doesn't make as much sense for them to be like, you know, doing what you want to do and kill every enemy in the room or anything.
Number two, for quick fire. These are long questions, but I trust you, Eagle. I like you. Can you guys objectively compare The Last of Us to Bioshock Infinite, the so-called game to beat for Game of the Year? I mean, objectively, Last of Us is a much better game, I think, than Bioshock Infinite.
I think that it is. It seems to not have any of the total thematic contradictions that Bioshock Infinite has.
I mean, I have to beat it. It's for me too early to make that call. I think, like, for a lot of the like mechanical things, it's actually really similar, like I keep saying. But I do, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have that weird, which never bothered me in Bioshock Infinite, but like a lot of people freaked out about, like the digging
pineapple
corpses and finding a pineapple and stuff. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't really have that kind of like ridiculousness that people talk about. Yeah, like I think The Last of Us probably addresses things like that significantly better. And I think there are little like moments in The Last of Us that were equally as poignant as something in Bioshock Infinite in terms of like the world building and things like that. But The Last of Us being grounded as like a world that we know, I think gives it like a huge advantage in that way. Like I think it's easier to be affected by something that isn't in a ridiculous floating city. You know what I mean? Like when you see like, holy shit, like this was probably like a bank where thousands of people worked and now it's like fucking all bombed out and there's corpses everywhere. Like that I think is more effective than like the floating parade fair in Bioshock talking about the history of Comstock or whatever. So I just think they're obviously trying for very different things. But I don't know. I would have to beat it to be able to actually like compare it.
The strange thing about Infinite for me was that while I was playing Infinite, I didn't care at all about any of the things that were quite clearly wrong with it. And I was totally caught up and I was totally sold on it and I bought in and I loved it. But then after I finished it and started, especially when I started reading criticism and discussing criticism with people, a lot of it was just didn't make any sense.
Sure.
And especially the kind of the way it handles race was just weird. Like it got weird.
I mean, again,
three quarters of the way through, and I didn't notice while I was playing. I just the kind race, of bought in.
The race stuff makes more sense in the context of like the Vox phones and like the added additive narrative that the additional narrative rather you can find from looking at stuff. I think I don't know. Infinite is a very special game in that I think it's about it, and actually in a similar way to The Last of Us, it is less about the world than it is about the characters. And yeah. I think Bioshock 1 is about Rapture. You are a conduit to learn about Rapture, whereas Infinite, Columbia is just the place for Elizabeth and Booker's story. And I think
a lot of people feel the opposite of that about Columbia, that it's a game about Columbia, essentially.
Maybe.
Well,
I mean,
with you, I think it's a character study.
For me, The Last of Us is a halfway point between those two things. Like, you're learning about the world in that it teaches you things about, like, Ellie is born into this world, and that is an interesting insight into her character, whereas Joel is very world weary and has seen both sides of it. And I think you even talk in your review a little bit about the fact that like occasionally you run into human enemies who are older, and you know, as you're strangling them or whatever, you might think about the fact that like, fuck, this guy like 60 years ago might have had like a normal working, probably not 60
years
ago.
He was a pharmacist.
Probably not 60 years ago, but like, you know, these are people who may have had real jobs.
Strangling
in the real world.
A 92 year old man.
Wow. Video games.
Yeah, I never finished Infinite because it kind of lost me, to be honest with you.
That's why I keep saying that. I'm hoping you'll beat it before we get to our spoiler cast so we can talk about some of the more direct comparisons.
Yeah, I'm gonna try. I mean, you know, I think I agree with Greg, and you know, having judged Bioshock and playing it 10 hours or whatever, The Last of Us is a much better game. But, you know, Bioshock's cool in its own way. I don't think you can really compare them too much beyond the fact that they're both, like, just dystopian, you know, what-if kind of games. One about, like, kind of an unwieldy, totalitarian, religious-based government, I guess, and the other about, you know, the decay of society.
And the two-character dynamic.
Yeah, of course. Yeah that too.
And the Troy Baker performances.
Yeah. That too. Okay, everything about it.
And all the zombies. Wait.
Yeah, I just think the emotional impact of The Last of Us is pretty much unrivaled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the game so special. That's what lets you see past the little things that we were talking about. You can nitpick the shit out of any game. You can just nitpick it to death, you know?
Yeah.
And be like, this ruins the game. But it ruins the game. I don't want to say it ruins the game if you let it. It ruins the game if the game lets these things ruin it.
Yeah, totally.
Ruin it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And The Last of Us doesn't ever fall into that pit at all. There was never a point in a game. You hear me, because we live, you know, we live together and our rooms are next to each other. I scream at my TV all the time. I'm fucking angry at video games all the time. Even the ones I like, you know? Yeah. What the fuck are you making me do this for? And all, you know. Never had that moment with The Last of Us. Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, are you sure?
I've had a ton of those moments so far.
Oh, no. Well, I don't want to.
That's not a reflection of the game being bad at all. I had those moments on Uncharted 3. I've had those moments in tons of games. Like, there are combat sections in The Last of Us where I wanted to fucking throw my controller out the window. But exactly. Like, you freak the fuck out. The thing is, the payoff has to be worth it. Because when I get out of that combat encounter, the next story thing, it was worth the struggle to get there. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what separates it for me. Like, I mean, if you went through that horrible fight and then you got to the next scene, didn't give a fuck about what happened, and got to the next terrible fight after that or something, that wouldn't be a fun game. The Last of Us makes those encounters worth it because you care about what's going to happen to the characters and you want to progress.
Yeah, and for all those, you know, the one thing we didn't touch on too was multiplayer, and like, multiplayer is really fun. And I don't like playing games online. You know that. The last game, strangely, I spent any amount of time online with, the two games that I really loved online were Homefront
and Homefront
and Fear 3. Those were the games, the last games where I was like, I like playing
this
game.
That is a bizarre list.
Known as the two pinnacles of multiplayer gaming.
Do you want to know a theory I've been developing?
Sure.
You know that I played multiplayer while you were gone in the demo environment, and I wasn't impressed. I thought it was fine. I thought it was functional. It grew on me the more I played it, but when I was done, I was done. I think the reason you like all of those is because you were forced to play them for review. And not even review. What, the Homefront you did a piece on, though, right? Wasn't there a
multiplayer? Well, I reviewed both of those games.
Oh, I'm getting confused.
But what I liked about those games... Like, Resistance 3's online was like, whatever. I loved Resistance 3.
But what I'm saying is you didn't review them. I think this is a mirror image of Uncharted, right? When I talked to Brian about Uncharted Multiplayer, I'm like, Uncharted Multiplayer is great, and it's fun. He's like, it sucks. It's not precise. I bailed early on. I think when we have to review these things, we sit down and we play them, and that's when it all sinks in. This is how this mechanic works with this. This is what this perk does.
You're paying more attention. Yeah,
I get it.
I think that's true.
And when a normal person plays them who's not invested, is just like you keep saying, like in your review, you talk about how, you know, I think you call it extraordinary at one point, the multiplayer, and how it does this. And I was like, this is ordinary third person. I'm running around shooting everybody. Not the survival mode, the one where we're on.
Supply raid.
Yeah, not that one, because I didn't play much of that. But the one where it's just, you know, we have teams or whatever and we're doing it. I love the metagame on top of it. I thought that was really cool. And don't get me wrong, this isn't me saying it sucked. There was anything wrong with it. It was just like, oh, okay, I don't like playing third person multiplayer all that much, and I bounced.
Yeah, well, the thing about the online component, whether you like it or not, is very similar to Uncharted. It's just not that important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's cool, it's there, it'll keep you busy. A lot of people are going to enjoy it probably for years, just like they did with Among Thieves and Drake's Deception. But it's really not what the game's about. Uh-huh, Last of Us would have been fine without it. You know, it would have been the same game, same score, you know?
Yeah.
It just so happened that, you know, Naughty Dog delivered. We didn't think that they would because they were so silent about the online multiplayer. It's very mysterious why they wouldn't talk about it. And we started to theorize it was either because it was bad or it was just like Uncharted or it was story-based. And it ended up being really none of those things. It was just that they didn't talk about it.
I thought it was going to end up like Tomb Raider's multiplayer, which it was so boring. Like, Tomb Raider's multiplayer just added nothing to anything. It was really boring. And actually, it was kind of broken. Like, it was functional, but I reviewed Tomb Raider, obviously, so I had to play it for that.
See?
I didn't like it.
I know, but we all have these multiplayer opinions that nobody else has, because we're all like fuck multiplayer. Yeah.
But it did make me think, like, if The Last of Us had a Tomb Raider style, you know, pretty boring, crap multiplayer, would that have affected it? Because for Tomb Raider, for me, it was like, I didn't fucking care that the multiplayer wasn't any good. I'm like, still play the single player.
It's
excellent.
I talk to Greg about this all the time. Like, I borrowed Tomb Raider from the library here. I played it, and I brought it back. Totally forgot multiplayer was a thing. Never noticed it in the menu. Never went into it. Like, my entire knowledge of Tomb Raider multiplayer is the commentary Ryan McCaffrey did about Team Deathmatch or whatever. Yeah. That's the only multiplayer I've seen from that game.
And to just, you know, because he was talking about how BioShock is the game, you know, the game to beat for Game of the Year. I still think Ni No Kuni was the game to beat for Game of the Year. And I think The Last of Us did it pretty handily. But Animal Crossing would be pure.
I don't think
Animal Crossing is not the run for Game of the Year.
I mean, it's if you like it, then it's amazing, but it's difficult to argue that it's a Game of the Year.
Yeah,
kind of
I think Fire Emblem was up there for some people.
Oh, yeah, that's a fantastic
I like Fire Emblem a lot.
But Ni No Kuni, man.
What's the... Oh, maybe that was it. What's the 3DS RPG everybody's playing? Is that Fire Emblem?
Fire Emblem, yeah. The strategy RPG, yeah. Between Monster Hunter, Fire Emblem, and Animal Crossing, I basically don't ever turn off my 3DS.
It's weird for me because this is the first time I've been torn away from my Vita in a long time and gone back to 3DS. Because I played a little Fire Emblem, a little Luigi's Mansion, but Animal Crossing.
It's funny because between Silent Hill, Book of Memories, Sunflowers, and Men's Room Mayhem, I never turn off my Vita.
Yeah, I know. Who knows what's happening on that device?
You know, for Men's Room Mayhem in the UK, the PR company that was promoting it sent out a bunch of condoms, like promotional condoms.
Nice.
With "it's coming" written on the condoms. Men's Room Mayhem is the thing, and I was like, "Good God, we're not 14!" Like,
if you're coming to Podcast Beyond 300, and you plan on punching your ticket for the one-way trip to Pound Town, make sure you bring these.
Jesus Christ!
And your gold for everybody. Let's turn this off because I'm starting to hear a buzz.
Oh,
it's you! You're buzzing around like a bee! Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for Podcast Beyond, episode 296. Remember, go to iTunes, rate us. Rate us on whatever other podcast service you download for us. We put it up every Tuesday, usually. We're going to be late next week, too, because of holding for Shuhei, holding for E3 reactions and everything else. But it'll come. It'll be quick and dirty. The quality will be not good because we'll be doing into a hand mic, so get over it now. Don't bother tweeting about it. But do tweet at us other stuff. I'm Game Over Greggy. Colin is No Taxation. Garfep is Andrew Garfold, is what I always want to say. I don't know. Why is that?
When you did the name first, you were usually fine. If you say Andrew Goldfarb is Garfep.
For some reason. Weird.
When you flip it, your brain goes, oh no, I made a mistake. It's like me with the official list of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms. If I miss one word, it's like my brain's like, done. I quit.
We're out. See you next week. And then Keza. I don't know yours off the top of my head.
Is it Keza McDonald?
With one Z, people.
And with an A.
I'm with an Mac. A. I'm MacDonald.
Yeah, MacDonald.
IGN, of course, is IGN.
Keza McDonald, famous serial killer.
If I were you, I'd stop what you're doing right now and tweet at IGN and say, hey, Podcast Beyond, they're pretty awesome. Also, I hashtag Beyond. You should always hashtag Beyond. That's what I do. You should do it too, because then we'll get it trending, and then we'll all be happy. Oh, my God. We're only five episodes away from Podcast Beyond 300, the live show here, July 12th in the San Francisco area. You've already gotten invited, so if you didn't get invited, too bad. Sorry.
With Zombie Studios developer Anthony Gallegos confirmed to appear.
Is he going
to
come here and show his game that he made? Has he made a game
he'll
yet?
He'll probably just be here drinking water.
He's been away for like a few days. He must have made a game by now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course. It's easy. Yeah. Everybody does it.
He already day one gets on Twitter and tells everyone to go buy Zombies games.
Did he?
Corporate shill.
That's awesome.
The shill.
As you know, every Podcast Beyond ends with a song. It's something we call Ryan's Wrap-Up. Today's comes from our good friends, Life in 24 Frames. Mm. They may or may not be a Podcast Beyond 300, but I'm not gonna yank your chain just yet, all right? Chris writes in and says, hope all is well in Beyond Land. I just wanted to shoot you over what will end up becoming the next single off of our record. I hope you guys enjoy the new song. If you decide to play it on Beyond, it will be the first time anyone has ever heard it. We have never played it live or otherwise. World premiere! And also, could you please mention our Twitter? It's at Life in 24 Frames. Everybody go do that. He says we're starting to use that and do giveaways. So there you go. Everybody here. Collins wears his Life in 24 Frame shirt all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's that and the Escape Plan shirt, and then it's collar shirts. Yes. If he's at home, yes. It's one of those shirts. No, he has collar shirt.
He has a few others.
I have, I don't know.
I'm going to say, over the space of the last few hours, I've not become fully familiar with your clothing repertoire.
Well, yeah, just pay close attention to that.
Are you here tomorrow?
You do costume changes?
Yes.
Are you into his shoes? I have a book about his shoes you can read if you want.
Seriously? Excellent.
Yeah. Also, when he eats, though, because he'll take off the collared shirt.
Yeah, he takes... So
does
Colin,
he take off his shirt?
When Colin's wearing a collared shirt, he takes it off and strips down to his undershirt to eat in case he stains it.
You wear like the nice collared shirt to come into work, and then you, in front of everyone you work with, take it off to eat. Don't get your...
I love it.
It's like when you don't bother clothing your baby before you're feeding it.
It would be better if
you know what's going to go everywhere.
Someone should send Colin a really big like bib to wear while he eats.
Oh, send a Beyond bib.
I never really get anything.
I've not got a really strange image of you just stripping down completely to your underwear and just like sitting eating in the corner and with no clothes.
He's got like
your
sock guards on.
To have like a pack of crisps.
My favorite thing, it's like, it's never like he finishes eating and has ketchup stains all over his shirt. Like, it's not like you're a messy eater. I feel like you would probably be fine to leave the shirt on.
Just, you know, you gotta be safe. Better safe than sorry.
It's true.
Well, I'm glad I knew this because I might have thought it was an office custom and then everybody would have taken their shirt off.
Because just there in her bra, eating a burrito.
Yeah, like, is this not what we do here? Like,
this is how we do it in the UK.
I'm very, very confused right now. But at least
all
I'm not
the guests
are
up at noon just standing.
You hard cut to Krupa sitting there, shirtless in the UK on
it. With his curly chest hair.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's Life in 24 Frames. The song is called War Drum Beyond.
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 Could only Everyone's recording.
Bye.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 296. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the pride of Long Island, Colin Moriarty.
That was weird. We didn't start the podcast right.
What did we not do?
Beyond.
Oh, right. That is weird.
Well, just keep going. You already ruined it.
No, it's too late. We're not episode 296. We'll put this at the end as an Easter egg for people to find. Congratulations, listeners. You got no fucking life. And you just listened to 10 seconds of silence to get to this gem. You fucking idiot. Go buy our t-shirt.
Damn.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.